Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for this hour of... Excuse me. Next up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Before we get started with this episode, I just want to acknowledge that this program is broadcast, and all of our programs here at CJSF are broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. And to start off this hour of talk on Speak Up, we have an interview that I did recently with North Shore Community Resources. This is a nonprofit organization based in North Vancouver that provides a lot of different services for residents of the North Shore, in particular legal services, and in this case, legal services regarding tenancy, residential tenancy. So over the month of January, they have been hosting these residential tenancy workshops that have been explicitly open for both landlords and tenants. And to learn more about that, I reached out to Zabi Raymond, one of the hosts for these workshops, as well as the legal advocate for North Shore Community Resources. So without further ado, here is that interview. Reporting from North Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. North Shore Community Resources is a nonprofit organization based in North Vancouver that provides programs and services aimed towards enhancing community and individual well-being on the North Shore. This encompasses a lot, including support resources for parents, children, and seniors, sharing local volunteer opportunities, and providing legal services, which includes support regarding housing and tenancy. Throughout the month of January, North Shore Community Resources has been hosting a series of workshops on residential tenancy. The goal of these workshops is to educate those in attendance about the rights and responsibilities of tenants, as well as landlords. To learn more about what these workshops entail, we reached out to Zabi Raymond, legal advocate at North Shore Community Resources. We got in touch and sat down for a conversation about these residential tenancy workshops being hosted throughout the North Shore during the month of January.
Sure. So I am a legal advocate here. I graduated law school a couple of years ago, and I've been working here for mostly pretty much ever since. We have a couple other legal advocates, a family law advocate as well, and then another community law advocate who works in the same kind of position that I do. His name's Nicholas Smith. He's also our manager. So basically what we do is, our director basically calls it the necessities of life law, that we basically help people with anything that is kind of like the basic needs that people need. So that includes mainly stuff like tenancy, employment, employment insurance, and a lot of income assistance as well. So basically anything that people need regarding any of those programs, we're able to assist them with it.
Okay. And could you explain these workshops to me? What do they specifically entail?
So these workshops, we have workshops on a variety of topics, but the ones that we have coming up are all just happen to be on tenancy law. So basically the kind of stuff that we cover is, it's kind of just like a broad view of tenancy issues that people have come up. There's too much stuff for us to really go like super in depth into every little thing, but it's kind of just like a bird's eye view of everything. So we kind of go over briefly, the residential tenancy branch and the Residential Tenancy Act. The Tenancy Act is just the legislation that kind of provides all the rules that will apply for people. And the Residential Tenancy Branch is the section of the government that actually applies those rules and governs them. So we talk about tenancy agreements, how important they are. We talk about the rules around having roommates, things about rent payments, deposits, fees, condition inspections, repairs and maintenance is a big one that comes up. A lot of like questions about like what, you know, a tenant's rights and responsibilities are and what the landlord's rights and responsibilities are in various circumstances. And we also talk about how tenancies end, whether how you, to move out if you want to move out, how a landlord can evict you if they're trying to evict you. And a big part of that also is dispute resolution. So what you can do if your landlord tries to do something you're not happy with, or if you've got a problem with a roommate, a neighbor even, and basically just kind of what your legal options would be for dealing with these circumstances.
So that feels very all-encompassing overall. I guess another thing I was curious about is what spurred your organization to start hosting these. You know, were you witnessing sort of a gap in knowledge surrounding tenancy law that needed to be filled?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely find that a lot of people come to us not really having any clue what their rights are in a certain situation. A lot of the time that's tenants who, you know, their landlord might be taking advantage of them in one way or another, and they don't really know, you know, what grounds they have to stand up for themselves, right? Like what their landlord is allowed to do to them and what's off limits. So we definitely want people to just kind of be aware of what rights they have. We also, part of it too, is that a lot of time people come to us kind of late in the situation. So sometimes it's, a lot of these issues are time sensitive. So it can be difficult in some cases to help people if they're kind of coming to us towards, you know, after a period of time when they actually could have, you know, contacted somebody about it or filed for some kind of dispute. Sometimes it's a little late to actually do something like that, and which just kind of, you know, trying to find the best resolution in a bad situation. So the more aware people can be of their rights to kind of prevent those situations from coming up, I think the better.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I had noticed looking into these tenancy workshops is that it's pretty explicitly stated that these are meant for both renters and landlords as well. Mm-hmm. Why did you feel that was important to stress, and how do you balance, I guess, the needs and the knowledge to give when both groups, I feel like, often mm-hmm. are considered to be like pitted against one another?
Yeah, absolutely. So like our organization, like our the actual direct services that we provide are limited to tenants, but for these workshops, we did think it was important to kind of have it open to everybody. Part of the reason for that is that a lot of landlords themselves don't necessarily know what rights and responsibilities they have. So sometimes, you know, they might violate some rights that a tenant have, or, you know, kind of take advantage in some way without actually meaning to do so, just because they don't actually necessarily know what they're supposed to do for their tenants or what their tenants are supposed to do in return. So generally, I think just the more aware that people are about these things, the more we can get ahead of certain issues and prevent disputes from coming up. And it's part of it is just to kind of let people know that basically any kind of disagreement, any kind of issue you have, there is a system in place to where you can at least try to find an answer for it or try to find some resolution for it. A lot of time people will try to take things into their own hands, and it can, you know, kind of spiral and make situations worse. So generally, I think for these workshops, we're mostly just kind of trying to give out information rather than specific advice to people. And that information we think it really is just helpful to everyone generally.
For any past workshops regarding tenancy that North Shore Community Resources has done, has there been any sort of information or aspect of tenancy law that has really grabbed people or made people think like, oh, wow, I had no idea that was something I needed to consider?
Yeah, there are a couple things. One thing is people don't necessarily know how important the tenancy agreements and the Tenancy Act are. So your agreement is really important because it will set out, it's basically like the primary document that will set out most of the rules between you and your landlord. So making sure that you don't agree to anything that, you know, doesn't actually sound right to you or that you don't actually want to uphold yourself. And then also in terms of the Tenancy Act, one big part that we find that people are often surprised by, is that the Tenancy Act, like while the agreements are very important, the Tenancy Act doesn't actually let you agree to anything below what its standards would be. So it kind of sets like a minimum threshold for what the tenants and landlords' rights are. So a landlord can actually get you to agree to anything below those requirements in the Tenancy Act. So the Act doesn't necessarily cover rules for every certain situation, right? That's part of what the agreement is for, is to kind of cover the areas that the Act doesn't. But for the areas where your agreement and the Act kind of cover the same issues, your landlord can't get you to agree to something that is against the Act. So certain things like security deposits and pet deposits, they're limited to half of your rent payment. So sometimes the landlord will try to get you to pay more than that. And that might even be in your tenancy agreement, but legally they can't do that. That's a big part of it, I think, is that people kind of just think that whatever they agree to, they're stuck to it, but that's not necessarily always the case.
And yeah, do you find that with these workshops, there's been a sort of demographic skew, or has it been, you know, a lot of longtime renters, or maybe people like now for the first time going into this market?
We find that it kind of depends on which organization is hosting the workshops. So these ones that we've had most recently and the ones that we have coming up have been with the local libraries. For these ones, we definitely find that it tends to be older renters. Like you said, a lot of folks who have been long-term renters, who've been in the same unit for many years. We will also have people who have just started a tenancy, and then maybe an issue comes up, you know, after a couple weeks or a month or something, and they're not necessarily sure how to go about it. But definitely we found that so far it's skewed towards older people and towards long-term renters. It's also been, by and large, tenants. We've only had a few landlords show so far, or at least only a few that have identified themselves as landlords. But we're hoping to, you know, kind of, like I said, we're hoping to serve everybody regardless of demographics. But we found that in previous cases, we've also had workshops with organizations like Impact North Shore, which primarily serve immigrants on the North Shore. And definitely when we have those kind of workshops, we find that it's mostly, you know, recent immigrants who are attending the workshops rather than like seniors or anything like that.
Yeah. And the response for those attending has been good so far.
Yeah. Yeah. We found that, the response has been really, really positive. People have found it very helpful. We always leave room for questions afterwards too. So if there's stuff that we don't cover, then, you know, people can either raise their hands or come up to us individually and ask us as well. So yeah, we tend to find that people, tend to get a lot out of it. We try to kind of answer any lingering questions that they might have and cover all the bases. And then of course, anything that we don't cover, we also encourage people to contact us, after the workshops as well with anything else that they have. And we definitely find that people have had a very positive response for sure.
Once again, that was our conversation with Zabi Rehman, the legal advocate for North Shore Community Resources, on their upcoming residential tenancy workshops. The remaining ones for January can be attended on January 21st at 6 p.m. at the North Vancouver District Public Library Capilano Branch, and on January 29th at 6 p.m. at the North Vancouver District Public Library Parkgate Branch. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, you are listening to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That was my interview with Zabi Rehman of North Shore Community Resources. You may have heard, but that next workshop is actually tomorrow. So if you are interested, go sign up. And coming up next on Speak Up, we have the second episode of a podcast series that we're hosting here at CJSF. This is coming from the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office here at SFU. It is titled Healing Together, a special edition podcast for SFU Sexual Assault Awareness Month 2026. Yesterday you heard the very first episode. That one was with Salome Mango Morales and Dahlia Israel. This episode today is with Koa Vo and Will Prakash Fujarachuk. And This is a podcast series that highlights SFU's sexual assault awareness month, like I mentioned, or you learn from mental health professionals, academics, educators, support workers, and people reminding us that healing injustice can take many different forms. So with that being said, here is episode 2. It's about 30 minutes. Hope you enjoy.
Healing Together is a series of intimate and thoughtful conversations hosted by SFU alums Salome Mengo Morales, Ira Rishi, undergraduate student Kovo, and myself, Paola Quiroz Cruz, one of the educators at the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. Featuring guests from diverse professional and life experiences, these interviews explore how healing, while deeply personal, is also profoundly communal. Healing thrives when communities come together to create spaces, attitudes, and practices that support it. Join us as we listen, reflect, and reimagine healing as a shared responsibility. In this episode of our series, Koa Vo, an SFU undergrad student, sits down with Will Prakash Friarshak, a sexualized violence prevention educator, doctoral candidate, and yoga instructor. Will reflects on a pivotal personal experience that sparked his commitment to gender-based violence prevention and underscores the critical role of engaging men in the pursuit of collective liberation. Drawing from his identity as a queer man and his work as a yoga instructor, Will offers practices that nurture healing within communities, highlighting the power of embodiment, chosen family, and ritual. This episode is an invitation and call to action to solidarity and collective action towards healing and repair. This conversation includes references to sexualized violence. We encourage you to take care for yourself and reach out to support resources if needed.
Hello and welcome. I'm Koa Vo, one of your hosts for this series. I'm part of the advisory panel for the Sexual Violence and Prevention Office at SFU. I'm an undergrad here hoping to get into med school. My lived experiences and studies allow me to explore the complexities of human behavior, trauma, resilience, and ways towards healing. In today's episode, I'm joined by Will Friarshak. Will is an enthusiastic educator with several years' experience working in sexual violence prevention in communities and on campuses. He is currently pursuing doctoral studies in educational research focused on governance, leadership, and policy relating to sexual violence in higher education. Will also enjoys teaching yoga and performing in drag with his consent, educating drag persona Unita Ask. Will holds an honors bachelor's of science in biology from McMaster University, a bachelor's of education from the University of Western Ontario, and a master's in peace education from the UN-mandated University for Peace. We're so grateful to have you here with us, Will. Your work sits right at the intersection of education, community care, and healing, which is exactly what the series hoped to explore. So, to start us off, Will, can you please share a moment or experience that first sparked your passion for sexual violence prevention in education?
Thanks so much, Koa, and thanks for the lovely introduction. When I was thinking about this question, there are so many moments growing up where all of them sort of collectively came together, maybe, to inform my passion for this work. You know, receiving disclosures from friends who either had attempts around sexual assault perpetrated against them or had experienced different kinds of sexual and gender-based harms. And then myself as a queer person, just navigating the different types of sort of harassment based on my gender expression and my sexuality. And all of those things really growing up felt like disconnected things. I didn't know how to make sense of them. I didn't often take them so seriously. You know, the narrative I would hear from friends and family around, let's say, someone in the public eye disclosing sexual harassment is that, oh, that's not that bad compared to other things. And they're making a big deal of it. All these things that I'm sure most of us have heard before. And where it really came together for me was actually during my master's degree at the University for Peace, which was a really wonderful experience and very personally and professionally transformative for me. So it's a small school in Costa Rica. There's about 150 students the year I went, just master's and PhD programs from all over the world. And sometimes we'd have external guests or students host these lunchtime brown bag talks. And I had a group of classmates from around the world. I think there was one from Turkey, one from US, one from France, one from a few from like folks from different parts of the world doing a talk around street harassment and their experience as women being harassed in all these different contexts. And they sort of tied in like gender theory and all of this and made it just so clear to me, tied in sort of all these, connected all these dots from all these other disclosures and experiences that I'd navigated earlier in my life. And I just understood the impact of these harms in such an amazing way. And it was interesting. I looked around the room and I realized I was one of like two or three guys in the room. And it was this moment of like, oh, the men need to like show up. And like, why has it taken me this long to show up in this work? And a couple weeks after that, a few of those women invited me to go into San Jose, the capital city, and they were taking some chalk and writing in the chalk on the streets these anti-street harassment messages. And it was a large group of women and me. And we were getting quite a lot of attention. People were coming up and talking to us. And I had this moment where I realized all of the men who were coming up to talk to our group were only talking to me and not to all my women classmates. And it was really this moment that it became so transparent what it means to use the privilege I had as a man to educate and engage other men in these conversations. And it all just kind of became very clear to me in that moment. And so from there, I got to work with the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region after grad school, and just kind of my career in this sector kind of expanded from there. But that was really, that street chalking moment was such a pivotal moment for me.
Thank you for sharing those moments of impact, especially from your time at the University for Peace, because it really helps us ground us in the heart of where you are coming from and behind your work. That street incident, that's actually pretty unique. But then again, it just may be contextual to where you were, but it may also be relevant to us here in the Lower Mainland or in Canada, right? Right, because mm-hmm. Your story offers such important context. So from here, I'd like to explore one of the themes guiding this series, right? The theme of this series is that healing is both personal and collective, right? So what does communal healing then mean to you?
I love this question very much. And I love that this is one of your themes, because I always say, you know, this type of harm, when we're talking about sexual and gender-based violence, it's harm that happens in relationships. And the healing and the prevention of this work has to happen in relationships, in community, right? I fundamentally believe that. And that's why for me, so often, I mean, I'm very extroverted as a person, so I love being around people. And folks will know when we pivoted virtually for the pandemic, doing this work felt so disingenuous through a screen, because I thought, you know, you have to build relationship with people. Like, that's what this work fundamentally is. And so I really missed being on campus with students when I was at McMaster University back then. And so to me, really, yeah, the healing and the prevention work needs to happen in relationships. And it's a reminder as well that our healing and our liberation is connected. And so often when we try to engage men, and that's where a lot of my work has been, which is why I'm drawing on that a few times now, you know, there are men who think feminism and all of this work to ending gender-based violence is inherently anti-men, right? But instead, what I would offer to anyone who thinks that is that actually this is a collective thing, it's a communal thing, and really, for me as a queer man, I have found feminism to be a guide and a framework through which I can myself, you know, find freedom, find liberation, find healing, and it's connected to everyone else's healing, right? And so I think just understanding that this work is really about communal healing is an important frame shift for people.
That's awesome. I love how you articulated that healing is communal, that it involves all members of society, because it connects beautifully to something else we want to explore here in regard to spaces, right? So what kind of spaces, be it physical, emotional, or cultural, have supported your healing or the healing of those around you? Or what are some of these practices, right? Be it personal, cultural, or creative, or spiritual, that you've seen be especially powerful in supporting healing from sexualized violence?
Great question. So for me, I recently started a sort of consulting / speaking agency called Project Ahimsa. So Ahimsa is referring to nonviolence, which is one of the first tenets of yoga. And I've been a yoga practitioner for a long time, and just this year became a certified yoga teacher. I found so much joy in becoming a yoga teacher. And it's interesting because I use this consulting business to do speaking engagements in drag, out of drag, but also I teach breathwork, I teach yoga. And I think on the surface to some people, those things might feel so disconnected and all over the place, and I totally understand why, but really they've always been so naturally integrated for me. So from the get-go, when I became a sexual violence prevention educator, I would often start my sessions, and I still do, with some mindful breathing, and I just teach a little bit of breath work and breath retention as a grounding practice, because this is an inherently difficult conversation to have for a lot of us. Emotions can stir up, it can stir up past experiences of harm. Just talking about sex in general can be really uncomfortable for us for various reasons. And so integrating breath work as a way for people to just be mindful and be able to sort of regulate themselves in the moment, and empowering participants in that way, you know, is something I've been doing for years. And so the connection between the movement parts of yoga, the breath parts of yoga, the spirituality of yoga really ties into this. And I know yoga for my own mental health journey has been such a healing thing, both sort of individually in the relationship I've cultivated with my own body, own mind, but then also community of people that I practice with regularly at the studios that I go to. I think in the pursuit of being taken more seriously, as we things like sexual violence offices, you know, popping up across the country, which didn't exist 10, 20 years ago, at institutions like SFU, like McMaster, like everywhere, I think it's easy in the academy to want to intellect you and think about facts and use that as a way to try to engage within sort of the language of the academy. But the truth is that this harm happens to people's bodies, to our psyches. It impacts our sense of safety and comfort. There's a spiritual element for a lot of folks. And so, yes, let's understand trauma from a scientific lens and all of this. Let's also create space for movement and breath work and take those elements just as seriously when we're talking about healing. I think I'm going to cut myself off there because I could keep going for a while, but I think I'll end my answer there for now. Thank you.
Oh, for sure. That's incredibly insightful. You mentioned that be it at the yoga studio or at academia or high institutions, it's a space for everyone. Because you mentioned your drag persona, can I ask, what would Unita Ask say about these spaces? Right? Because again, it includes yourself and myself and everybody around us
I
and even our
think.
alternative personas. Yeah. Can you share a little bit since you brought up? I'm so interested.
Yeah, it's funny because really when I'm in drag, as you need to ask, I mean, a lot of what I'm saying is the same as what I say as well when I'm out of drag. But I think